Well, if you can make your way through all the nasty weather out there this weekend, you might be thinking, I'm going to try to work my way through some of those films nominated for the Golden Globes. Well, good luck with that. Juno and Atonement are only in limited release. Sweeney Todd, Charlie Wilson's War, they're out next week in full release. There Will Be Blood, The Great Debaters, you need to wait till Christmas. So what's a moviegoer looking to plunk down his or her hard-earned $11.50? What do they want to see? What might they be able to see? Some vampires, some Afghan refugees, computer-animated chipmunks. We're not going there. First, we're going to talk about those vampires in a movie listed in some places as sci-fi, others it's horror. Some say it's a thriller. It's definitely a star vehicle for Academy Award nominee Will Smith, who plays the last human alive in Manhattan. It's called I Am Legend.
My name is Robert Neville. I'm a survivor living in New York City. I am broadcasting on all AM frequencies. I will be at the South Street Seaport every day at midday, when the sun is highest in the sky. If you are out there, if anyone is out there, I can provide food. I can provide shelter. I can provide security. Please. You are not alone.
We are not alone either. NPR's film critic Bob Mondello is on the phone to sort out if this film is worth our time. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Yes, it is worth your time. It's a good thriller. Actually, it's not even the thrills that are worth seeing. It's the sight of Manhattan deserted and with weeds growing in the middle of Park Avenue.
That was the part they were filming near my house. I was walking home. It was near my wedding, and I looked down. I kept seeing like tufts of grass down Fifth Avenue, and I realized that they were anchored to giant pieces of concrete. It was part of the set.
Oh, it looks incredible. I mean, I assume a lot of it's done digitally. I mean, they must have erased people in some of these shots. But it's really impressive. I understand it caused some serious traffic jams there, too, for a few weeks.
It was a little bit scary. So the film, I mentioned that it's considered a horror film. Is it frightening?
Well, yeah. I mean, it makes you jump. But that part of it is sort of less interesting than the visuals. And something else that I think is there that the screenwriter doesn't even think it's there. I mean, didn't put it there. Which is that this whole thing is about terrorism.
How so?
Well, if you think about it, this is ground zero for a plague, right? New York is ground zero, and what's happening in the picture is that all these people are coming and just sort of banging themselves against plate glass to destroy civilization, right? These zombies are after the one guy who's still standing, and he's trying to find a cure, and he can't get it together. But even if he did get it together, these people are just going to keep on coming and trying to kill him.
Because he's the last person. He's been immune to whatever has infected all these people in the world.
That's right. And he's sort of Western civilization. It all starts when they try to take a virus and modify it to cure cancer, which is kind of, if you think about it, like arming the Mujahideen in Afghanistan to fight the communists back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
We did. So that
unintended consequences.
Exactly. And this is, it's the same kind of thing. So, you know, what ends up, he's holed up in this little tiny apartment in downtown Manhattan. It's sort of a homeland for him, and it has walls all around it, and he can't go out. Mm. Well, does that sound familiar? it's really about terrorism. But at best, it's a subtext. I mean, it's not there in the film.
All right. Well, let's use that reference to get to our next film, The Kite Runner, a hugely successful novel. This man returns to Afghanistan to save a friend's son amidst the height of the Taliban's power. Here's a clip.
You should come home.
Home? I don't know if now's such a good time.
It's a very bad time. But you should come. There's a way to be good again, Amir. It will not be easy. But you must come, Amir.
Ali.
You're a good man.
Ali, inshallah.
Khuda hafiz, Amir John.
Khuda hafiz.
You all right?
I have to go to Pakistan.
The book was so popular and had such a powerful story and really conjured up such imagery. Does the movie do the same?
Well, not for me. I didn't read the book, and I wish I could say that I just was bowled over by this because the basic story is really touching. But it also has some novelistic kind of tricks where a villain who appears very early in the film comes back 20 years later, and you're thinking, my gosh, are there only three people in Kabul?
Right.
It's like it's a little frustrating in that sense, but it's I mean, it's very nicely acted by these two little boys for much of the picture, who actually had to be spirited out of Afghanistan after the filming because of a scene in there. There's a rape and a betrayal, and they decided that that sequence would be so offensive culturally in Afghanistan that these kids might find their lives in danger. So they were spirited out to Dubai, I think, or somewhere in the Middle East. But the picture is effective in a lot of places, but I felt as if it sort of wound down at the end, and it was kind of frustrating because it's filmed just beautifully by the guy who did Finding Neverland. He's really good at working with kids.
All right, and finally, we've got about a minute left. This documentary about a really dark event, the Japanese invasion of Nanking, China during World War II, and the horrible captivity and torture of the Chinese during this time. I'll let you pick it up from there.
Well, it's basically, it is a documentary in which they have about 22 people, 22 Westerners, tried to make all of this sort of end. And what they did was they set up a safe zone. They didn't have any authority to do that. They just did it. And for some reason, the Japanese sort of observed it. 250,000 people were killed during all of this. About 200,000 people were saved because of these folks intervening. And those people left diaries and things. And there are a lot of survivors who talk about things that happened. And they have people like Woody Harrelson and Mariel Hemingway reading from the diaries. And these real people talking about watching their mothers being stabbed while nursing their baby brothers, that kind of thing. It is so grim and so powerful. And it's a kind of an overwhelming piece of documentary filmmaking.
Bob Mondello, you give us a little bit of something for everybody. That last film sounds like it's really worth checking out, but you have to be in the right head to do so.
Yeah.
All right, Bob, thank you so much, as always, for joining us. It's always a pleasure.
It is always a pleasure. I'll talk to you next week.
See
Thanks,
you,
Bob.
Bye.
Enjoy.
Yes, that music means it is time for me to say goodbye to the Bryant Park Project. It was almost 2 years ago that Matt Martinez, Andrea Seabrook, and I locked ourselves in a room at NPR DC for 3 days with the mission of coming up with a new program for the network. Thanks to a ton of hard work from Maddie and the folks at NPR Programming, including Jay Kernis, Margaret Lowe Smith, and Eric Newsom, a little radio show was born. I'm very proud of what we've been able to accomplish so far. I can't wait to hear where this program goes in the years to come. Thanks so much to the BPP staff, who every day ignore the call of sleep, their family, and regular showers to get the show on the air. Thanks to all of you for listening. You're the wind beneath our wings, except for when you're being petty with your comments. Then you're the sliding glass door that we fly into by accident. All right, that didn't really work. Crap.
For a smile they can share the night. It goes on.
I am off to Seattle, but before I go, I want to share with you the single most important gem of advice I've picked up in my life, something that will guide all of you, dear listeners. Whatever happens, make sure you always make a point to always, and I'm